Are you with the crowd that wants to demolish Southern statues and burn Southern flags after praying for answers in the Temple of St. Lincoln?
We killed tens of thousands of American citizens, maybe hundreds of thousands, with no due process whatever in the Civil War, and it was the right thing to do.
Whoa, I thought you were one of the good guys. Maybe you should start going to church every day instead. Mike Church, that is.
It's good! It's good! It's good to see you all in church.
It's good to see you, too, here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the war in the Persian Gulf. Doings in the Persian Gulf. You know my favorite part of that war? It's the first war we ever had that was on every channel plus cable. And the war got good ratings, too, didn't it? Got good ratings. Well, we like war. We like war. We're a warlike people. We like war because we're good at it. And you know why we're good at it? Because we get a lot of practice. This country's only 200 years old, and already we've had 10 major wars. We average a major war every 20 years in this country, so we're good at it. And it's a good thing we are. We're not very good at anything else anymore. Huh? Can't build a decent car. Can't make a TV set or a VCR worth a fuck. Got no steel industry left, can't educate our young people, can't get health care to our old people, but we can bomb the shit out of your country, all right. Especially if your country is full of brown people. Oh, we like that, don't we? That's our hobby. That's our new job in the world, bombing brown people. Iraq, Panama, Grenada, Libya, you got some brown people in your country. Tell them to watch the fuck out, or we'll goddamn bomb them. Well, when's the last white people you can remember that we bombed? Can you remember the last white? Can you remember any white people we've ever bombed? The Germans, those are the only ones, and that's only because they were trying to cut in on our action. They wanted to dominate the world. Bullshit, that's our fucking job.
It is a tragedy, is it not? Welcome back. It's the Mike Church Show here on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network at veritasradionetwork.com. Are they describing Hiroshima in this song? All right, here comes the punchline. All right, back to the subject at hand here. Yes, that's the Brothers Gibb.
Peter Church, why do you always play the Bee Gees?
Because I like them. I can. By the way, folks, before we get to Chris Ferrara here and we get to the discussion at hand here about Hiroshima, and Ferrara tells me he is all fired up, as am I, to hear what he's got to say. And we'd love to hear what you have to say. My lovely producer is in the other room, and she is waiting over there to hear with bated breath to hear what you have to say. So if you're not freaky or disgusting, you got to play that clip for Kreslins once per day. I put it manually into the rotation. We've got to get that into the into the rotation, so that we can spike those phone calls, and we can prevent you people from Trent Kreslins playing the Seal song, which has now become, you know, Seal ought to be paying the Crusade Channel royalty. Anyways, Christopher is waiting for you for your call.
So if you have a romantic query and you are under the age of 50 and you're not freaky or disgusting, please give us a call. My lovely producer, she is over there and she is waiting with bated breath to hear what you got to say.
Forget the she part. back to the I just wanted to mention this before we get back into our discussion here. So this Memorial Day weekend, we went to the in-laws' house, and we had a great time hanging out in Longville, Louisiana. But an event occurred that just has to be discussed because it is a marker of why we're in the predicament that Bishop Sheen spoke of last hour that we talked about. And the reason that we're in the predicament that Bishop Sheen spoke of last hour is precisely because, I'll give you the clue, bro. It's precisely because we have no boundaries. Once upon a time, there was a boundary in between what passed for, what we call today a sacramental marriage, and what is not a sacramental marriage. Today, we have, thanks to Henry VIII and all the heresy that came after him, we have now been subsumed and then consumed with the idea that marriage is simply what it is that you say it is. If you want to write your own vows, oh, if you want to quote the prophet Khalil Gibran or whatever, go ahead, write your own vows. If you want to have it in a church, don't worry about a church. You can have it out in the middle of a lake if you want to. You can have, instead of ushers and what have you, and instead of churchgoers waiting in line for Holy Communion to sanctify the rite in front of the holy in attendance, just a bunch of frogs or dogs or animals or whatever. So I actually bore witness to a kind of a friend. I don't know him that well, but getting married in what can only be described as a near attempt at a mockery of a wedding. That, yeah, we'll just go, we'll have a big party, everybody will get drunk, we'll ordain a minister online for $150, and after we do that, then we'll say a vow, and if the bride doesn't agree, oh, I don't know about all that, then we'll just move on. Folks, with any respect due to my tangential friend, that is a symptom of what has, that is a symptom of the results of Hiroshima. As Bishop Sheen was saying, he could nail it down to the day, 8:45 a.m., 8th of August, 1945. When that bomb exploded over Hiroshima, all boundaries were destroyed. Anything was then humanly possible or inhumanly possible. So to talk about all this and to try to put this in perspective, we now turn to the author of Liberty, the God That Failed, Chris Ferrara, and also the second book that he co-wrote with Thomas Woods, which is now in its second edition here. And what is the title of that book again, Chris Ferrara?
The Great Facade.
The Great Facade.
It's about the regime of novelty, as I call it, in the Roman Catholic Church since the Second Vatican Council.
Boy, howdy. And boy, do we have a regime of novelty everywhere now, it seems.
Yes, and the reason we call it The Great Facade is that, in fact, there is no official change in Catholic doctrine or dogma. These are basically new attitudes, new practices, novel undertakings, the net result of which has been catastrophic for the Catholic Church, but it's all a facade because behind it all is the traditional Catholic faith, which remains untouched and available to anyone who seeks it.
I made this point to someone yesterday. I know who it was, my Latinist friend who translated that book by St. Robert Bellarmine, Ryan Grant, and one of the things that we talked about is we both have friends that are either Protestant or Orthodox or whatever their, quote, denomination is, however you term it these days. And I don't mean any offense to anyone over that. And doctrinally speaking, it is still the Catholic Church that has maintained one magisterial teaching. Chris, I'm getting a feedback now.
You got an issue with audio?
Just with me. But no, it's gone now. So when we talk about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and most people do not tie the moral problems that we just discussed and now the almost complete detachment from any form of unified magisterial authority that Almighty God might have handed down to us. Most people don't make the connection. Bishop Sheen did in the 1960s at that speech that he gave, or the talk that he gave to those young people at that school about sex. And I assume that you're going to make it as well.
Well, the history of the past 300 years, beginning with the Lutheran Revolt, under one aspect has been a long process of transfer, a transfer of the sacred from the church to the sacred nation state. When Luther's rebellion began, Christianity became fragmented into dozens and ultimately thousands of different pieces. The Lutheran and Reformed Protestant confessions were religions that were subordinated by the state. So, for example, King Henry was the head of the Church of England, and the German princes were the head of the church in their respective territories. So first there was a subordination of religion in a new version of the confessional state, and then ultimately religion in general was subordinated by the secular nation state. And that secular nation state becomes the object of sacred devotion and determines even questions of right or wrong. Now, when it comes to the question of the firebombing of Dresden in February of 1945, the firebombing of Tokyo in March of 1945, the atomic bombing of Hiroshima in August of 1945, and a few days later, Nagasaki in August of 1945. When it comes to these questions, we're given this idea from the defenders of these abominable actions that somehow they were justified because America exists in some sort of state of moral exceptionalism. But actually, these acts of indiscriminate bombing of civilian populations are simply, objectively speaking, crimes against humanity. If the Germans had done them, they would have been prosecuted in Nuremberg for those crimes along with the others they committed.
Right.
Now, there's some basic moral questions here, and I'm surprised to see the ignorance even of Catholics of these basic moral questions. And they involve two errors against fundamental moral norms. They go by the names of proportionalism and consequentialism. We can talk about consequentialism first. The argument the consequentialist makes is that something is good, an action is good, if its consequences are good. That's just another way of saying the end justifies the means. So, for example, you could say, I was justified in murdering my mother-in-law because the outcome was peace in the home and my children didn't grow up with domestic conflict and they now are well-adjusted people. When you add up all of these good consequences, can't you see why I had to murder my mother-in-law? The proportionalist tries to develop the consequentialist system by saying, look, obviously something like the bombing of Hiroshima has bad effects, but we have to weigh the proportion of good effects to bad effects. And then we can argue that if you look at the fact that the invasion might have cost X number of American lives, the outcome on balance is better for us. So bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki, the firebombing of Dresden and Tokyo, these were simply the lesser of two evils. Now, of course, both of these errors against morality are precisely that, errors. They are basically justifications for immoral conduct, and it's essentially the ends means morality, which no one would apply in daily life, but somehow the nation state gets to do that.
That's right.
And crown itself with glory for having done so. Now, Pat Buchanan has written a terrific little article on this. I won't burden the listeners with extensive quotations, but he cites the testimony of Admiral William Leahy after the bombing, the atomic bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And Admiral Leahy said, this use of a barbarous weapon at Hiroshima and Nagasaki was of no material assistance in our war against Japan. My own feeling was that in being the first to use it, we had adopted an ethical standard common to the barbarians of the Dark Ages. I was not taught to make wars in that fashion. Now, that's what Leahy said. Even here, there's an error, however, implicitly, Because even if the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki had been of material assistance in the war against Japan, it still would not have been justified, because the end of material assistance in our war against Japan did not justify the means which involved incinerating sleeping women and children and numerous other non-combatants. The combined total of Hiroshima and Nagasaki was about 300,000 by the best estimates, in order to shorten the war. That is simply immoral. The end does not justify the means. I'm amazed that even Catholics can't see this.
Well, of course they can. How can they see it when they have never been properly catechized and have not been taught that there is such a thing called a just war theory, Chris? I mean, this would or that there are actions in war that are only to be taken in a certain set of circumstances. Instead, we're told that if we're pushed, well, go put a boot in his butt. You know, if someone says anything untoward about America, well, you got your dose of American exceptionalism coming. You know, we've learned to live by the creed that might makes right, and that I think what the error here really is that the end justifies the means, and that there is that any end that benefits America. Any end, doesn't matter what it is, if it even tangentially, or even if you have to stretch, or you have to lie to make it so that it benefits America, well, then the whatever means that you arrived at it at is okay. That, to me, is the fundamental problem, and it shouldn't be a surprise in a society and in a civilization now that cannot even bring itself. We have full-grown a male and female adults that have given, through the grace of God, have cooperated with God's grace and with His beauty and with His love, and have brought forth children into this world. And now those same adult males and adult females, in the roles that they are given under the fourth commandment to be honorable so their children can honor them, cannot even look themselves in the mirror and proclaim that there is a difference between men and women, because we don't want to offend anyone. And if Junior wants to be a girl today, well then, by gum, Junior's a girl today, and who am I to get in way of this? I mean, this is just an absolute shocking, and it's happening so fast, detachment from reality. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone that nuclear annihilation can be passed off as something that's uniquely American, as if it's just another ballpark Frank or a slice of apple pie, right?
Well, speaking of ballpark Franks, there's a documentary on the use of nuclear weapons. I think it's called The Atomic Cafe. Go look it up on Netflix. And in the aftermath of the bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, there was a radio broadcaster joking about it. And he said that Hiroshima looked like Ebbets Field after a doubleheader. This is the kind of thing that has earned America the enmity of people the world over. This arrogance, this hubris, this treatment of other nations and other peoples as if they were disposable objects in the path of the great American project of bringing democracy to the world. And the problem here is that patriotism, the worship of a nation state, and we're talking about our homeland, the ground under our feet, the country we love, the place where we raise our families, the place we would die for to defend, but rather I'm talking about the nation state, the worship of a nation state, an abstraction, has interfered with the most fundamental moral principles, clouding people's judgment. You're probably going to get calls today from people who are outraged that anyone could suggest that America, as you call it, was not justified in firebombing Tokyo and atomic bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki and firebombing Dresden together with the British. At the end of a war, by the way, all of this happened in 1945, when these actions weren't even in utilitarian terms necessary to bring about an end to the conflict. They were almost gratuitous.
Yeah, and there's also the fact that, and some of this is just not, if it is known, it's not repeated. There's also the fact that the harbor at Hiroshima, that it is in a harbor there, if you look at it on a map, the harbor was mined. Even if there was a military base there, and there was a small one 3 kilometers away, it wasn't in the actual city. It was outside the city. It was outside the civilian population of the city. Even if there was a military base, an installation there, even if they could have gotten boats into the water to go attack Americans in Okinawa or wherever they may have been, the harbor was mined. They never would have gotten through. They'd have gotten blown to kingdom come. You know what? I reckon this, too. I'm going to drop a little humor in here on this. I reckon most people today, to intelligence level and their level of ignorance on this, as if they were characters on the 1960s and early 1970s TV show Gilligan's Island. There was there was an episode of Gilligan's Island because, you know, the mindset is where the, you know, the Japanese, of course, Christian Americans portrayed participated in, and so did Catholic Americans, I assume, in the overt racism that was aimed at Japanese in the cartoons and the commercials at the time of the war. You know, they were portrayed as monkeys. You know, they're dragging their knuckles on the ground, oversized eyeballs, protruding craniums, you name it. But you recall in one of the episodes of Gilligan's Island, we find the actual justification for Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the firebombing of Tokyo. And that is contained in, there were certain warlords that were never going to surrender. They were going to fight to the last man. And this Gilligan one day discovers on the the submarine that has been carrying this World War II Japanese soldier gets marooned on Gilligan's Island, and he thinks that the war is still going on, and he's going to fight and kill everyone from the SS Minnow down to the last man. That really is the comic view of how Americans view the end of World War II. And if you present any evidence to the contrary, they're not actually going to quote Gilligan's Island, but they're thinking about the character from Gilligan's Island. How sad is that?
Well, even if it were true that the Japanese on the island would have fought to the last man, what of it? That still doesn't justify a moral calculus according to which you fire a bomb, an atomic bomb, civilian populations, which is essentially terror bombing, in order to bring a nation to its knees. That is simply, again, objectively speaking, a crime against humanity. That is not how a war is fought according to the fundamental standards of morality, assuming it's a just war to begin with. And no one is disputing that Japan was the aggressor, that an argument could be made for a just war. That's not the question here. The question is, how do you wage war? In war, as well as in daily life, morality applies. Universal moral norms are not suspended. It is false to say that all is fair in war. It isn't fair in war if it's objectively immoral and violates a negative precept of the natural law. In this case, thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not kill sleeping women and children. Thou shalt not kill hundreds of thousands of non-combatants. Thou shalt not engage in terror bombing to bring a civilian population to its knees so that the warlords of that nation surrender. It is simply immoral. Again, if we had lost, we would have been on trial in a Nuremberg-style proceeding. But the victors determine morality, and that is the problem with the sacred nation state. The sacred nation state determines all questions, even questions of right and wrong. And that is now, we see now, in a kind of diabolical parody of the sacred nation state, the bathroom wars. Now, 35 different genders must now be accommodated in the state of New York in bathrooms. It's a danse macabre, a diabolical parody of the last days of a neo-pagan empire collapsing into itself because it lacks any kind of moral fiber.
844-527-8723 is our telephone number. This is the Mike Church Show here. We are live in the Bulldog Kia studio. Please go to our friends at Bulldog Kia if you're looking for a new or used car. They have been our sponsor on the website at MikeChurch.com for over a year, and from the founding moment of this network. It's 855-BULL-DOG, or go to BULLDOGKIA.com and take advantage of their VIP delivery service, meaning you don't have to live near Athens, Georgia, in order to get the best deal in North America on a new or used Kia from our friends, the Kernall family, at Bulldog Kia. Go to BULLDOGKIA.com today, or call 855-BULL-DOG. We'll see you at Bulldog Kia. You tell them the King Dude sent you. We're live here with Chris Ferrara, author of Liberty the God That Fails. By the way, we have hardback and paperback copies of Liberty the God That Failed and the Chris's other book that he mentioned at the start of this, The Great Facade, and hardback. We have both of them in the Founders Trading Post, autographed and dated by Chris Ferrara. Pick yourself up a copy today. Go to mikechurch.com/shop, and you'll find those books there. Chris Ferrara, staying on the subject here that is at hand about the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And we're not even to the anniversary, which is in August, and that's when all the fanfare and the parades and all the chants of USA, USA, USA will begin anew. Compare that to what St. John Paul II said after visiting or during his visit to Hiroshima on the 25th of February, 1981. Quote, two cities will forever have their names linked together, two Japanese cities, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. As the only cities in the world that have had the ill fortune to be a reminder that man is capable of destruction beyond belief, their names will forever stand out as the names of the only cities in our time that have been singled out as a warning to future generations that war can destroy human efforts to build a world of peace. To remember Hiroshima is to abhor nuclear war. He went further on the. He stated to Japan's ambassador to the Holy See on September the 11th, 1999, 2 years before 9/11. Quote: "The cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are a message to all our contemporaries, inviting all the Earth's peoples to learn the lessons of history and work for peace with even greater determination. Indeed." They remind our contemporaries of all the crimes committed during the Second World War against civilian populations, crimes, and acts of true genocide. Close quote. Seems that John Paul II seems to have gotten this right and was having none of this apostate nonsense that might makes right, and if it's your state that's doing the killing, then it's okay.
Genocide is genocide. There is no such thing as a special category of American genocide that is exempt from moral scrutiny. Again, this is the first nation in the history of the world ever to use nuclear weapons at all, much less deploy them against a civilian population in a sleeping city, in two sleeping cities. For me, an iconic moment in the history of so-called liberty is Truman, a 32nd degree Mason, dropping an atomic bomb on Nagasaki, where ground zero was the Catholic cathedral. That, to me, is an iconic moment in the great progress of liberty. And the progress of liberty has meant nothing less than, over time, over the time elapsed since Luther's initial revolt, it's a process of emancipating the body politic that was once Christendom from the influence of the Holy Catholic Church. Now, that's what this is all about.
Yes. Now, Chris Ferrara, you were on a retreat for the better part of the firestorm, the maelstrom that was the Obama edict that was issued that every bathroom in the land and every public school in the land will accommodate transgenders. Will have social policy in the schools that will be taught to accommodate transgenders. And parents will not admonish transgenders. Teachers will not tell parents if their kids are coming to school and changing their clothes when they get there and actually attempting to change their sex and are being counseled by schools into this. Are we in the midst of another revolution here? Have the Gebelites now seen that they must completely control the children and the minds of the children in order to secure their place in this empire that they're creating in the near future?
Well, of course, that's what's going on. We're in the final stages of the de-Christianization of the Western world, which is essentially complete already. Now they have to remove the last traces of even the natural law from the minds of children. And again, this comes down to the emancipation of the body politic, all of Western civilization, from its once harmonious relationship with the Catholic Church. Now, when I say harmonious, I don't mean we had paradise on earth, that there weren't corrupt leaders, that there wasn't corruption in the church. I mean that to the extent that is possible, the church acted as the conscience of the state so that no matter what sins individuals committed, we never saw anything like legalized abortion, the sale of contraceptives, filthy pornographic sex education in the public schools, the general decline of public as well as private morality, in a so-called free market society. We never saw any of these things. We saw individual sinners, but institutionally, culturally speaking, the continued relationship with the Catholic Church allowed for the maintenance of basic public and private morality throughout social order. That is gone. It's completely gone because society has been, quote, liberated, unquote, from the, quote, control, unquote, of the Catholic Church, meaning from God himself.
844-527-8723. It has been said that the fruit of abortion is nuclear war. The logic is that abortion creates a society where human life isn't valued above all else, where the end justifies the means, and where moral absolutes can be obliterated by good intentions. All of that was ingrained in our nation's psyche 30 years before Roe versus Wade. I think it would be more accurate to say the fruit of nuclear war was abortion. And that's Dr. R. Jared Stout writing last year on the anniversary of Hiroshima, John Paul II, Fulton Sheen on the bomb, and conversion. I think he has that about right. And that any country that can actually kill its soon to be born and then can conspire and then effectually achieve a near zero population growth through contraception has pretty much achieved the dreams of the diabolical Margaret Sanger. But I think the reason I like the Fulton Sheen quote and the talk that he gave those kids in the 60s was, he actually pinpointed the moment. You know, America was in trouble already. She was in trouble when we divorced ourselves from magisterial teaching and claimed that we, the people, have all the authority. We're in trouble then anyways. This was going to happen regardless because there is no contravening authority that can control the designs of men. But somehow there was enough residual grace left over to keep some of it in check. And, of course, Fulton Sheen says that when we drop the bomb and people can form their minds that, well, that could be okay if we obliterate entire societies, well, then, of course, that same society could obliterate their own future civilization, Chris Ferrara, and thus homosexuality, rampant run amok now, and all the abortion and all the other sex and contraception that we see all around. It all kind of makes a little bit more sense now, doesn't it?
Well, you may get a call from one or two people who protest that they follow Jesus, they believe in his teachings, they live moral lives. So what are you talking about when you say America is apostate? Well, that's precisely the point. The individual is still permitted within an ever narrower ghetto of the private conscience to believe what he chooses. The problem is that there is a disjunction between public and private morality. That religion, the religion of people who will call up and angrily protest that America is a Christian nation, the religion of the individual is privatized, and the government has adopted militant secularism, a civic religion whose one dogma is toleration. Toleration, of course, of everything but the truth, which is what we see happening today. Pope Leo predicted this in his encyclical Libertas, when he said that if truth and error are allowed to contend with each other in public life, sooner or later error will prevail and the truth will be obscured, and those who profess the truth will suffer persecution. That's exactly what we're doing now. Our laws determine the character of the nation, its ethos. If the nation is secular, it is at war with its own people as individuals. Francis Fukuyama makes this point in his book on the end of history and the last man. He says that the liberal state, growing out of the tradition of Hobbes and Locke, engages in a continuing struggle with its own people. So the individual who protests about the greatness of America fails to notice that America, at the level of its laws and institutions, no longer corresponds even remotely to what he may believe privately as an individual Christian. And that's the fundamental problem here. The disjunction between public and private morality, which comes as the inevitable consequence of the abolition of any kind of Christian commonwealth. And that's what we're living through now. The secular state is trampling all over us because it's unbound by any moral standard. And even the individuals who profess to be Christians refuse to admit that this is a problem.
Well, I think that it's not that they refuse to admit that it's a problem, but they actually think that the problem is the cure. And that's where the real disconnect is, that we're just another election away from fixing all this. And this detachment from reality and from what has been demonstrated in actual practice is quite Quite amazing. Chris Ferrara, that's all the time we have, but I look forward to having you back on the June 17th of this month, on the next day that we recognize an apparition that appeared to those children in Fatima, Portugal, and then every month to the 17th until we get to the miracle of the sun. Are you up for that?
I certainly am, and the Fatima event is of singular importance for what is happening in our civilization today. I hope we can show that in that series of shows.
I guarantee you that we will. All right, my brother, thank you for your time. Appreciate you.
Hey, take care, and God bless
you. All right, God bless you too. Folks, that's all the time we have for this segment, but we're just getting started here today on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network.